May it please the court, Stuart Fullerton, Phoenix. May it please the court.
Mr. Fullerton.
Thank you, Your Honor. The district court erred in dismissing the Section 2113A, paragraph 2 counts against Mr. Laniello and Mr. Thornton on double jeopardy grounds in these two cases. And the order dismissing those counts, should be reversed. The paragraph 1 and paragraph 2 counts were premised on two distinct criminal provisions, and they satisfy the Blockberger test for double jeopardy purposes. Thus, the government may bring the cases successively, as it did here. The two provisions of paragraph 1 and paragraph 2 are separate and distinct in their elements, and this is can be seen from an examination of the text of the section. The first paragraph of section 2113A prohibits the commission of a bank robbery, an attempted bank robbery, by force and violence or intimidation, whereas the second paragraph of section 2113A runs to prohibit the entry into a bank, the premises of a bank, with a felonious purpose or intention to commit a felony affecting such a bank. The history of the statutes indicates that the second paragraph of section 2113A was added at a later date to encompass criminal conduct that was not prohibited by the first paragraph of that section, and indicates, therefore, that Congress had an intent to crack down on people who were committing the crime of bank robbery or who may not have come within who may not have met all of the elements of the first paragraph of that section, but that there was a separate class of criminals or people who were committing crimes that needed to be prescribed, whose conduct needed to be reached by the second paragraph added at a later date. As I said, the two paragraphs are separate. They're distinct. They satisfy the Blockberger test in that the elements of a paragraph 1 offense paragraph 1 offense contains an element that is not contained in a paragraph 2 offense, and a paragraph 2 offense contains an element, entry into a bank, or attempted entry into a bank, which is not contained in the paragraph 1 offense. So we think that the district court erred in its reading of the text and history of this statute, but we think the main error in the district court's reasoning flowed from its erroneous reading of the Prince case, the Supreme Court case Prince. That case held only that paragraph 1 and paragraph 2 offense committed at the same time in one episode may not be a defendant who commits both offenses in one episode may not be subject to multiple punishments.
That's a pretty good indication that it's the same offense.
Well,
you can't have consecutive sentences for violating two subsections.
Prince did not base his decision on a Blockberger analysis of the two provisions. Prince instead just held that the two provisions, when committed at the same time, Congress didn't intend to authorize multiple punishments. It's not quite the same thing. It's certainly not a Blockberger analysis as to whether the two paragraphs are the same offense. So we don't think that Prince forbids successive prosecution after an acquittal. It doesn't authorize multiple punishments in the same trial for a defendant who has, for example, completed a bank robbery and thus has also committed the paragraph 2 offense of entry into the bank with the intent to commit a felony affecting the bank. But because Prince does not rest on Blockberger grounds, its analysis doesn't reach this case where, excuse me, there's no danger of multiple punishment because as the court held in the Thornton case, which was a previous visit by one of these cases to the Court of Appeals here, there is no paragraph 1 offense present in this situation. There's only a paragraph 2 offense. So we're not dealing with a multiple punishment situation, but rather one of successive prosecution after an acquittal. Now, I want to emphasize that, of course, double jeopardy is greatly concerned with successive prosecution after an acquittal for the same offense. This is not the same offense under Blockberger. And there are safeguards that, under our reading of Prince and our reading of double jeopardy, there's a safeguard against a sort of safeguard here of protecting a defendant against unfairness because the issue preclusion rules would come into effect after an acquittal, on the merits at a trial. If it were determined that, for example, the defendant accused in a paragraph 1 offense was the wrong person, or did not, it's an issue of identity, a subsequent prosecution under paragraph 2 would not be available because of issue preclusion grounds. That issue of whether the defendant was the man involved with that episode had been determined preclusively by the first trial, and therefore there's a protection against the prosecution after an acquittal. There's also protection for prosecution after conviction because, under our reading of Prince, Congress did not authorize multiple punishments for these offenses arising out of the same episode, and therefore the government would have no interest or there would be no incentive for the government to bring a prosecution after a conviction where no added increment of punishment would lie under Prince and what Congress had authorized. So, for all these reasons, we think that Blockberger, under Blockberger, the paragraph 2 offense is available for prosecution after the acquittals here on the paragraph 1 offense. We think that the district court erred, and we ask this court to reverse the orders of the district court.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Fullerton. Ms. Schwab.
May it please the court. The government is trying to do something now that it couldn't have accomplished originally, and that is to secure two convictions and two sentences under the two paragraphs of 2113A. But the government fares no better now on appeal is clear for three reasons. First, the Supreme Court decision in Prince, which held that 2113A was one offense, governs this case. Second, this case ends with the first prong of the three-prong test.
Well, I'm a little worried about that use of Prince. Let me give you the following sequence. The defendant is charged under 2113D with armed bank robbery, and he's acquitted after he tells the jury, I'm sorry, two of us went into the bank, but my confederate robbed the bank, and I just took the money from him. The jury believes that and acquits him of armed bank robbery. And the United States then charges him under 2113C for receiving the proceeds of a bank robbery. Separate crime. Would you think there's any double jeopardy problem with that sequence? Justice Brennan would find a double jeopardy problem because he would say, under my same transaction test, they had to make all the charges in one case. But the justices haven't followed that.
Right.
So if you don't take the same transaction view of double jeopardy, is there any problem in that sequence, do you think?
I suppose with the caveat, of course, that Prince isn't talking about that, and it's talking only about 2113A. But under that, I think that you could probably prosecute them twice. I'm not sure.
Well, that sounds right, but as you may know, the Supreme Court has extended Prince to 2113C. Mm-hmm. That is, in Heflin and Gaddis, the Supreme Court says, as the court had said in Prince, that at least on conviction, all the 2113 charges merge. So if the prosecutor had charged, in my hypothetical, both robbing the bank and possessing the proceeds, and the jury had convicted him of both, the Supreme Court would say you have to merge the charges. There's just one proper conviction, and it's the more serious conviction. And yet I think you're probably right in concluding that the merger rule of Heflin and Prince and Gaddis and Bell, for that matter, doesn't mean that under the Double Jeopardy Clause there can't be a multiple prosecution.
I'd like
and
to
then my big question to you is why for purposes of the Double Jeopardy Clause, the first two parts of 2113A are any different from 2113 followed by 21D followed by C.
Okay, Your Honor, I can address that. I think the government is coming at this in the totally wrong way, and they've set up this wholly, what they call a wholly separate test for double jeopardy purposes. But really, there is one test. Albernez says that, and we set forth the three-prong test in our brief. The first prong is a test, is a standard statutory construction test. It applies under the principles of constitutional avoidance, and it's a pure statutory construction. And under the first prong of this test, which is where Prince applies, but also where you engage in using the tools of looking at the text and the legislative history and so on, under that it's clear that Congress intended to create but one offense, and that's what Prince says. It stopped at that initial statutory construction prong, which means that the Blockberger test, which the government is trying to impose on this first prong of the test where it doesn't belong, has no place there. You don't even need to reach Blockberger. Because if the court has found, and what 2113A shows as a matter of statutory interpretation, it's just one offense.
But then, this leaves me puzzled about your answer to my bank robbery followed by possession of the proceeds. Because Heflin and Gaddis say that if you're charged with both, they have to be merged into one conviction.
Your Honor, you know, I'm not prepared to reconcile that. I would be happy to do it in a supplemental memorandum. What I'm trying to explain is the progression of the test and Prince's role in that, of the traditional statutory construction and the three-prong test of how you decide whether Congress intended to create one offense or two offenses, which is the first prong of the test. And then, if there's just one offense, which is what Prince found, there's just one offense, then that ends the inquiry. It's a totally separate inquiry from what the government is trying to superimpose here, which is if there are two offenses, if you find that Congress intended two offenses under that initial statutory construction, then you move to the second prong, which is the only place Blockberger arises, and Blockberger answers the question whether if there are two offenses, if it's deemed to be two offenses, whether they are the same offense. So that's the distinction that I'm trying to make here. I think that the government comes at this the wrong way, and whether that implicates the subparagraph, your hypothetical, Judge Easterbrook, I don't know, but I do know that they are attempting to superimpose and to switch around a test or to argue for a wholly separate test for double jeopardy purposes that simply doesn't exist, and that, I think, is contributing to a lot of the confusion and seeming conflict in this case.
Maybe we should get supplemental briefs from both sides. I'll give you 2 weeks, but the question raised, the issue raised by my question is whether the Supreme Court's merger holdings, and I've mentioned the four cases, Price, Heflin, Gaddis, and Bell, that deal with 2113, whether whenever the Supreme Court says that particular charges merge on conviction, essentially a multiplicity doctrine that you can, prosecutor has to elect between A and B or can have only one conviction of a platter of ABC, etc., whether whenever that holds, that necessarily means they are the same offense for purposes of the Double Jeopardy Clause. Because that's what the district court held here, and it's essentially what you're arguing. So I think the court would be happy to have that issue addressed expressly.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes. Moving on, though, as the district court further recognized, the government simply ignores the Prince decision in its analysis. Prince does factor in here. And although this merger question is separate, I don't think that Prince can be read as a simple sentencing merger case in the wake of it did hold that 2113A creates but one offense, that it cannot be punished twice. And then building on that, in Brown v. Ohio, the court had said, well, if you can't have multiple punishments, which is kind of gets to your question, Judge Evans, if you can't have multiple punishments, you can't also have successive prosecutions. And building on that, it can't be a sentencing merger case because Ball and Rutledge say that if there's impermissible cumulative sentences, the underlying convictions likewise cannot stand. But I think the important point to recognize here is that in 2113A and in the test, the three-prong test that applies to ascertain...
I don't want to take up too much of your time, but putting it that way brings back to my mind more of these merger cases. Take a statutory doctrine. The Supreme Court has held that if somebody is convicted under 2113D, the armed bank robbery provision, there isn't a separate enhancement you can't be separately convicted and separately punished under, I think, 924E1, basically for felon in possession of a gun, right? But that's already taken care of in the 2113D possession.
Okay.
But it now sounds like you're saying if you're charged with armed bank robbery, something that would preclude the felon in possession conviction and acquitted, you can't be charged with being a felon in possession of a firearm, even though the only reason the felon in possession charge is precluded is that it's kind of wrapped into armed bank robbery.
Well, I'm not trying to make that point. All I was trying to make is
I'm just trying to make it clear what my concern is about this argument that anything that merges or where as a statutory matter there can't be cumulative punishments, therefore, as a constitutional matter, there can't be separate prosecutions. And that's what I hope both of you will address.
Well, Your Honor, it's not just the Prince merger doctrine. I mean, this case stands alone on the statutory construction itself. And if you look at the proper framework, which is why I'm coming back to this three-prong test, and I'm sorry if I'm not expressing it the right way, but in that first prong, you engage in a statutory construction to discern congressional intent. And that intent is clear when you look at the structure of 2113A, the structure of 2113 as a whole. When you look at the legislative history, when you look at all of these tools, they show that Congress intended to create one offense. And if it is one offense, then it can't be two offenses, of course. And if it can't be two offenses, then the Blockberger test, the constitutional test, which applies only to decide if two offenses are the same offense, that's the only thing that triggers that. So it isn't just about, you know, I think you can separate this from the merger issue and so on by looking just at the statutory construction, which establishes that this is one offense. And that ends the inquiry. The court need go no further. And there is no, it doesn't need to reach the constitutional question. There is no separate test that makes Blockberger the exclusive test. There's no separate test. Blockberger is relegated to the second prong. It's our position that under a statutory construction, when you use all those tools, that it's clear Congress intended one offense. That ends the inquiry. Moreover, even if you were to look at Prince and distinguish Prince, and even if you were to go through this entire statutory construction that we laid out in detail in our brief, including the very compelling legislative history and the fact that 2113A as a whole uses different drafting conventions, even if you were going to get to the bottom of that, it still would be not crystal clear that Congress intended to create two offenses, and therefore you would apply...
What do you think would happen as a constitutional matter if Congress added, I guess H is the last one now, Congress adds 2113I, and 2113I says, every paragraph in this statute creates a separate offense, comma, but no punishment under this statute can exceed the punishment for the most serious of all the offenses of which the defendant is convicted.
Under that,
would that mean that as a matter of the double jeopardy clause, they weren't separate offenses?
Well, it would certainly establish for the first prong, the statutory construction prong, it would give shed a lot more light as to whether Congress intended to create single offenses or multiple offenses. And from there, I guess you would go to the second prong of the test and reach the constitutional question. So that's a different situation from what we have here, because 2113A is far from clear that it establishes two offenses. And as I was going to say, that if you get to the bottom of that, you're left with this question, you apply the rule of lenity.
You know, maybe I'm just a broken record. I was trying to focus your attention on what happens as a constitutional matter when there's only going to be one punishment for multiple offenses.
Yes.
Right? You seem to be saying, and the district court was express in saying, that if there can be only one punishment, no matter how many offenses you're convicted of, then there must be only one offense, and therefore the double jeopardy clause bars multiple prosecutions. Right? All of this comes from the there's only going to be one punishment, see Prince. But I'm going to have to stop saying this because I don't want to consume your time.
I understand, Judge Easterbrook. And my point is that even if this court were to distinguish Prince as merely a merger case, you still have to look at the statutory construction and to look and to discern congressional intent, whether it's out of constitutional avoidance or it's just the first prong of the test. You do that, and that stands by itself as establishing congressional intent. And unlike the example that you just gave, the sub I, where Congress explicitly says we're trying to create separate offenses here, that's lacking here in 2113A. So when you look at the statutory construction, it's clear that, from our brief, it's clear that it was trying to create but one offense. And if it's not clear, then the rule of lenity applies to bar the government's successive prosecution here. After all, Blockberger itself is only a rule of statutory construction that applies, that does not apply or gives way to evidence of contrary legislative intent. And we believe Prince stands for and shows that contrary legislative intent. We believe the statutory construction shows that as well. So Blockberger is not this super test that applies to determine, in the first instance, congressional intent to create one offense or two offenses. We think Prince is instructive here, but this court need not wholly rely on Prince because it can do its own statutory construction, as we did in our brief, and conclude that there's just one offense here, and that ends the inquiry. And for these reasons, we respectfully request that this court hold, affirm the district court's decision, and find that 2113A, under all sound principles of statutory construction, creates but one offense. And if the panel has no further questions, I'll rest. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Fullerton?
Contrary to our opponent's argument, Prince does not hold that Congress created only one offense in Section 2113A. Prince held that there was only one punishment authorized for both for an offense that violates both paragraphs of the section, and it's the merger rule that you're hypothetical.
Well, Prince has certainly been understood that way. You may remember the Fifth Circuit held in Gaddis that that's what Prince meant, and therefore the prosecutor had to elect between subsections of 2113D and could go to the jury with only one because there was only one offense. And the Supreme Court thought otherwise in Gaddis. One reason why I raise this is neither side discusses Gaddis, but the sequence of Prince and Heflin and Gaddis and Bell trying to unscramble what 2113 does needs some attention.
Right, and we'll address that in the supplemental filing, Your Honor. So unless the court has...
Am I understand correctly, though, that this is a little foggy here, but the first subsection, first paragraph, is the only one that you can attach a 924C count to. Is that correct?
Yes.
So you get that 60-month consecutive sentence on anybody who's convicted on violating the first paragraph. But if you're left with just charging a second paragraph case, you can't tack on a 924C.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. Right.
Is that why the government prefers to only charge Section A?
Well, that may be one reason that paragraph 1 count would be preferable to a paragraph 2 count. And in this case, in the Thornton case, where the defendant did have a gun, that was one reason why that, I think that may be one reason why that paragraph was charged. Ultimately, it was held that offense was not committed, and so we brought the paragraph 2 offense, indicted on the paragraph 2 offense. But to answer your question, the 924C is not available on the paragraph 2 offense, as I understand it. So anyway, we ask the court to reverse the orders of the district court.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. And I want to thank Ms. Schrupp and your colleagues for your willingness to undertake the appointment and your assistance to your client and the court. No.
Okay.
Nor a word limit. Only the limit of reasonableness. Okay?
It can't take us more than 2 hours to read it.
The case is taken under advisement.